Hello, welcome to Ace Pod Season 2, brought to you by the law offices of E. Jason Blankenship. And we're calling it a new season because it's a new year. I didn't reset when the academic year started, so we'll fix that next year and get on the way they number the rest of the podcasts on this site. And but it was time to hit refresh. And hopefully Michigan basketball can do that soon, because right now they have hit a bit of a rough stretch. They have now lost 3 of their last 4. This podcast is just going to cover the Iowa game, because we've covered everything else in previous podcasts. This was a 90-83 road loss that very much felt like a road loss. A lot of the focus post-game was on the 30-5 free throw disparity. Fouls, Michigan commits 22, Iowa commits 13. Brandon Johns fouls out, Franz Wagner and John Teske finish with 4 fouls, as does Austin Davis. Xavier Simpson sits for about 12 minutes in the first half with 2 fouls. A lot of whistles going against Michigan, not nearly as many going against Iowa. I don't want to say that that is the number one reason that Michigan lost this game, because I don't think it is. I also do not believe the gap should have been that large. But when you play the style that Michigan does in this game, and I think the style is represented by Eli Brooks ending up being their leading scorer, Brooks pours in 25. Most of his shots come from beyond the three-point arc. Michigan as a team finishes with an equal number of shots from two-point and three-point range in this game, 34 each. And when Brooks does take two-pointers, most of them are of the pump fake from three and step in for a long two variety. So that's, I mean, it was productive, especially for Eli Brooks. It's just not really a way to draw many fouls. I do think there were some inconsistencies in terms of how they called stuff in the post. But Iowa was also going to the post more than Michigan was. So, you know, you get Luka Garza once again having a very big game. But his effectiveness, he's 8 of 15 on two-pointers. Not all of that is feasting on John Teske, who I think actually did a pretty good job against him. But he goes 11 for 13 from the line. He hits 2 of his 3 three-point attempts, which is you just kind of got to tip your cap on those. And Michigan does show, Juwan Howard does show a willingness to change up his post defense. We did see some double teams in this game, especially with Xavier Simpson being able to kind of roam off of Joe Toussaint, who's not a shooting threat. He does not attempt a three-pointer in this game, even though Michigan helps off of him a decent amount in the 13 minutes he's out there. And Michigan was able to get – I thought this did a nice job of taking Garza out of the kind of dominant paint presence mindset that he had been in the first game, and how we've seen centers perform against Michigan of late. The double teams were not always consistent. Michigan left Teske out on an island for the first 2 or 3 post possessions that Garza had, with up-and-down success. Teske gets some stops. Garza got his. And then they started bringing down a double, and on one of the first double teams they bring in, while Garza is preoccupied with Xavier Simpson coming down on him, John Teske is able to poke the ball away. And then on subsequent post-ups, you can see Garza, instead of kind of setting up shop the way he did against Michigan in the first game, where he was really able to take his time. Kind of, you can almost see him map out where he wanted to take his post move. A lot of times there were a couple, to, you know, a setup move and then another move. He got sped up a little bit by both looking for the double team, having to anticipate hands coming in from multiple places, and knowing that he might not have as much time if Michigan sends a late double to get a shot off. So I thought Juwan Howard did a solid job of changing up the strategy there. The other things that jump out to me from this game are that you know, beyond the foul disparity, Michigan takes 18 more threes than Iowa does and makes only two more. And that's with Eli Brooks going 5 for 11. But Franz Wagner only goes 2 for 8 from beyond the arc on a number of good looks. David DeJulius goes 0 for 3 on some good looks. Brandon Johns goes 0 for 2. He still does not seem very confident in his shot. Adrian Nunez takes a short shift in the first half and goes 1 for 3 from beyond the arc. It's just, you know, you acutely feel the loss of Isaiah Livers in this game, especially when you combine the foul trouble with what Iowa was able to throw out there in terms of multiple bigs. You know, a big turning point in this game is in the first half when they put Ryan Craner out there. And a lot of that was with Luka Garza still on the floor or with him alongside Cordell Pemsel. And when Michigan tries to respond by putting out Austin Davis or Colin Kasten alongside John Teske, that goes very, very poorly. Teske and Davis as a duo in this game were outscored 23-9 on 12 offensive possessions and 13 defensive possessions. That's pretty much getting outscored by a full point per possession, which is awful. And it wasn't hard to see why, you know, having Teske and Davis on the floor at the same time destroys your spacing. And what, you know, kind of bulk that they could provide on defense, it did not make up for the fact that, first of all, they're still not defending the post that well. Although, as I said, I thought Teske improved in this game. But when Davis was singled up in the post by Garza or Craner, it was an advantage Iowa. And when Davis is in space on defense, it's a problem. And they didn't do enough. There was no offensive rebounding out of that duo, really. Davis comes down with one. Teske comes down with one. So there's just not enough to really justify it. But then you're really stuck in a situation where, you know, Franz Wagner, we just saw the last time out, wasn't able to guard a true four, let alone Iowa can put out basically two true fives. Who both can stretch the floor, which is really tough to match up against. There's a reason they're one of the best offenses in the country. And this is another area where Michigan really misses Isaiah Livers, is that, you know, Livers could be a viable defender against Ryan Craner. I don't think that's the case with Franz Wagner. So then you're stuck either playing these two big lineups or hoping that you can outshoot them from beyond the arc, and Michigan doesn't do that in this game. And that ultimately makes a difference. So, you know, a tough road loss, not necessarily one that you wouldn't expect. And I thought Michigan did a great job of fighting through a lot of adversity in this game between not having Livers out there, having to play a bunch of lineups that they have barely played all season, and facing the foul issues that they had, and also Iowa, you know, hitting back multiple times when Michigan either had the lead on them and then lost it, or let Iowa get out ahead. You know, this was a game that could have gotten out of hand at some point in the second half, and instead Michigan was in there until the finish. And I think that along with some promising signs from certain players, you know, I was very encouraged by the play of David DeJulius, who goes 5 for 9 on two pointers, steps in and leads the offense, 4 assists with no turnovers. As I mentioned earlier, Simpson sits a decent chunk of the first half when he picks up two fouls. And right now, when Michigan is turning over the offense with Simpson out, it's being run by DeJulius much more than Eli Brooks. And given the way each is able to finish near the rim and distribute, that seems like the way to go. DeJulius had a couple great floaters in this game, some really nice finds near the rim, did a great job in transition, moved the ball. He set up a Franz Wagner 3 with a quick, decisive pass in transition. Also had a couple tough finishes in the rim on the break. So, you know, you'd like to see at least one of his threes go down, but other than that, really hard to complain about any part of his performance. I think the main complaint is that you'd like to see him get more minutes, especially in a game where Simpson sits for as much as he did. For Simpson to play 29 minutes and DeJulius to only play 19, you know, it's a tough one. You look at the 4 minutes that Adrian Nunez was out there, and I think you'd like to see those go to DeJulius at this point, because Nunez is not adding a ton as a shooter, and he was once again a negative on defense in this game. He was the culprit on at least one C.J. Frederick three-pointer that swung momentum right after John Teske had hit a three late in the first half. It kind of seemed like Michigan was going to keep it really tighter than expected heading into halftime, and for Frederick to kind of hit right back was it took a little bit of the wind out of the sails there. It's enough of me bloviating for the moment, so I'm going to take a really quick break and then come back and answer a bunch of your questions.
When your plumbing breaks, you hire someone who knows how to fix plumbing. When your power goes out, you hire an electrician. When you are injured in an accident, you should hire someone with experience. Jason Blankenship, a Michigan law graduate, has over 20 years of litigation experience to help you. Jason has handled matters and venues across the state and country, from various circuit courts across the state through the Michigan Supreme Court and the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Jason's experience in both federal and state courts makes him able to handle your complicated personal injury case. Before starting his own firm in 2014, Jason worked at a large plaintiff's firm, but he left in order to give his clients the personal attention you and your case deserve. Jason selects each case personally, and you will deal directly with Jason to resolve your case. The insurance companies have teams of lawyers on their side. You should have someone on your side, too. Call 248-533-0516. That's 248-533-0516. Or email Jason at blankenshiplawyer.com.
All right, let's get into your questions, although I think I've accidentally answered parts of several of them in my little opening monologue, so I apologize for that, including this one from at mismatchplaid. How much of the officiating balance in Michigan's road games is Big Ten refs handing out on home cooking versus Michigan's offensive style? Trying to determine how angry I should get when I see Terry Weimer doing a game. First of all, well, Weimer had his run-ins with John Beilein. I actually think he's one of the more decent officials out there. He was on the Iowa game, so that doesn't necessarily go to his credit. But I don't know. It's a truly bizarre year in the Big Ten. Home teams as of Saturday's games, the completion of Saturday's games, are 41-7, and a number of those seven losses are by either Nebraska or Northwestern. So when you're playing a real team in the Big Ten, it is unusually impossible to win. And as ESPN's John Gassaway pointed out in an Insider article that went up on Sunday, that is bucking the national trend, a longtime national trend. The ACC, home teams are actually 22-29. There has been a long-term trend of major conference teams winning a lower percentage of their home games. It used to be over two-thirds. Last year, that number was a hair above 60%, the lowest in the KenPom era. So I don't know how to explain this because it seems like some part of it is the way games are officiated, but that also happens in other leagues, and there is not a disparity nearly this large in terms of home teams being able to win. I have to imagine a certain amount of it is just a fluke that is going to level out as the rest of the season goes on. As for to get back to the officiating imbalance, yes, some of it is playing on the road and dealing with refs on the road, and that you might not pick up a few calls for a game that you would otherwise. But again, I go back to Michigan's style of play, where the main guys that are attacking the rim, I mean, the number one guy who does it is 6 feet tall and is not looking to draw contact. Michigan in general is not taking a huge number of shots at the rim, especially not contested shots. So it's certainly a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. I can see why people are getting annoyed by the officiating in these games. It's somewhat absurd to have a home road split this big, but again, I don't know if you can chalk that up entirely to officiating. It just something about it feels just a little bit fluky to me, and we'll see whether that holds up. Next question is from at NT9125. Was the two big lineup featuring Teske and Davis as bad as I initially thought watching live? Obviously, things are handcuffed a bit without Livers. So yeah, as I mentioned in the first segment, that lineup really, really, really did not work. They were outscored 23-9, and if you go through with removing guarantee games, most of this is still the Iowa game, but what is surprising about the Teske Davis pairing is they're getting absolutely clobbered on the glass on both ends, and I don't know, especially when first of all they're giving up, opponents are making 75% of their two pointers. They're also making 2/3 of their threes, but you might be able to chalk that up to luck and on low sample size. This is all low sample size, I should mention. When opponents have an effective field goal percentage of 80 and are also rebounding 50% of their misses, that's really, really atrocious. So they're giving up more than 1.5 points per possession because they can't cover ground. If a team has stretch options, it's just not going to work. But as mentioned, without Livers, Juwan Howard is pretty handcuffed. I will say there is one way that he can loosen the cuffs a little bit, and unfortunately it would not have solved necessarily the primary issues in the Iowa game, because all of Michigan's bigs were in significant foul trouble. But he has a beeline-esque auto bench approach so far. Michigan is 311th in the country in two foul participation, which is of the available minutes in the first half. Once a starter gets two fouls, how often do they play for the rest of that half? Michigan's at 7.5% of the available minutes. A sterling example of why this is not a great approach: Xavier Simpson sits for a bunch of the first half. That includes that means Michigan gets Adrian Nunez out on the court for 4 minutes. That did not go great. Xavier Simpson plays 29 minutes in this game. He had two fouls when he sat down in the first half. He finished the game with two fouls. So that, you have to do it based on personnel. Like I can absolutely understand if you've got a center who picks up two quick fouls, yeah, you might need to get that guy on the bench, especially with the way the game is being called. But when it's Simpson, a guy who has proven that he's pretty good at playing to avoid contact when he has to, he does not foul out of many games. And also, you've got a viable backup in David DeJulius if you need him. But for those minutes in the first half, the main thing that Michigan needed to do was avoid the rather predictable outcome of putting Adrian Nunez out there. So wouldn't have necessarily solved the problems in the Iowa game. And Isaiah Livers returning, which sounds like it's going to happen pretty soon, is going to ease up a lot of these issues in terms of the lineups that Michigan has to put out there. I'd still like to see Juwan Howard get a little more comfortable leaving guys out there with two fouls in the first half. The next question I think I have accidentally covered, which was, What are Michigan's options outside of the double big lineup after Johns gets in foul trouble? That is from at Oh, I need a name. One is trying to go small with that three guard lineup. The problem is that at least for this game, Iowa is an unusual team in that they can either go one in, four out, or even five out with Garza being able to knock down threes and Kreener also being able to knock down threes. Or they can play this enormous two-post lineup with two guys who are very much center-sized for college ball. And Michigan can handle that when Livers is healthy. But when Livers isn't healthy, that they just don't have somebody right now other than Brandon Johns who can guard, you know, burlier fours or guys who pass off as fives. Franz Wagner just isn't big enough yet. When Michigan had him at the four, you know, they get crushed on the boards. When they had him in the Minnesota game, you know, he got worked in the second half by Alejandro Demir, who is not a big time scorer. So, you know, this is one of those situations where you just foul trouble is going to handcuff you, and there isn't an ideal solution there. And when you have foul trouble compounded by injury, you know, that's really tough. So, I mean, I don't think there's really an option out there right now except wait for Livers to get healthy, which cross your fingers, I think is going to happen relatively soon. From at JD Techie, going forward, who is the backup big behind Teske? Seems like it's Davis, but that also might have been an artifact of playing bruising big guys. Does Castleton still get more run? I mean, I think they're going to keep letting Castleton try to develop, but honestly, at this point, I think Davis has kind of locked that position down just because he's able to generate extra possessions on offense. Michigan's offensive rebounding, and this is with the guarantee games removed, actually jumps by 11 percentage points when he is on the floor, and so that makes up for, you know, him being not as smooth a catcher and finisher as John Teske is, and he's improved quite a bit as a finisher. But the big thing is on defense. Even though he is limited out there, you know, he's not the quickest guy. You're gonna have to play drop coverage with him against the pick and roll, pretty much. So stretch bigs are gonna give him trouble, and you know, a guy like Garza is still gonna give him trouble in the post. But the same thing is happening with Castleton. And Caston just gets so out-muscled in the post and does not have the rebounding instincts right now to make up for that. That I think, depending on the matchup, Austin Davis might be preferable, and maybe even putting Brandon Johns at the five, as we've seen some earlier this year, might actually be the preferable option to putting Castleton out there. I still have high hopes for Castleton. I think he's got a lot of potential, but it just feels like it's a year in the weight room away from really coming to fruition right now. So we'll see. Those things can turn pretty quickly. Big men improve at unpredictable rates, I would say. I mean, it's tough to figure out when a guy is kind of going to take that next step. The issue with Castleton is it really seems like it's going to require time in the weight room for that, so I don't know when you're going to be able to get that in until the off season, unfortunately. From at Dr. Garbs, looking at the upcoming schedule, do you think the new tendency to double the post will continue? Other than Kofi Coburn, I don't see another potential bully big upcoming until Caleb Wesson. I think Michigan is going to, when they can, mostly stick with Juwan Howard's preference to single in the post, because That fits in with what is clearly his broader approach of trying to limit threes as much as possible. And I like that approach. And I think, you know, I've mentioned earlier that as long as you're not getting absolutely destroyed in the post, being able to suppress threes to the level Michigan has been allowed them to win games even when the opposing center goes off. It's, you know, obviously they need to be less extreme about it when going up against a guy like Garza. We saw how mixing in some doubles can help. Without necessarily giving up threes if you're going off of matchups. So I think, you know, it's going to depend on the matchup. I think we'll still mostly see single coverage in the post. especially once Livers comes back and kind of allows you to have a little bit more lineup flexibility with your big men. And then depending on the matchup, you know, I bet they'll double down on Weston a little bit, especially since Ohio State has some shaky shooters. And Coburn, I would sure hope they would double down on him, considering Illinois is a team full of not, they're one of the worst shooting teams in the country. So I think it'll be pretty situational. But I wouldn't expect Juwan Howard to totally change his philosophy here. An email question from Adam. How do you expect this team to be different come March in comparison to right now? Do you think we will develop favorably in comparison to other Big Ten teams? Late season always seemed to be a Coach Beilein specialty. That certainly was the case. And well, for different reasons than what Michigan had under Beilein, which was usually that things were so complicated to learn, particularly on offense, but also when they overhauled the defense in the a couple of seasons. It just took a while for the team as they were cycling through young players to just kind of be comfortable with what they're running. But you had some of that in the transition this year, especially on defense, in the switch to Juwan Howard. So I think as all the players get more comfortable in his defensive system, I think you'll see some improvement there. I don't think Teske will get worked in the post like this all season. Given what we saw out of him last year, it'd just be odd for him to have that big a drop-off, even as he takes on a significant amount more responsibility on offense. But you have that transition cost, so I think that'll work in Michigan's favor as the season goes along. Obviously, we expect Isaiah Livers to come back, and that will change a ton. That really changes Michigan's ceiling dramatically. So I don't know if they're like the potential two seed looking team that they were coming out of Atlantis. I don't know if they're the 6 or 7 seed level team that we're seeing these last few games either. Livers really was probably, other than maybe Teske, the last player that they could afford to lose. And that even includes Xavier Simpson, mostly because of what's behind him, because I like David DeJulius so much. But there just wasn't someone who could replace all the different things that Livers did, and they're having a tough time even finding people who could replace what he brought in pieces. So that should be an advantage. And I think, you know, one big thing that we're going to see is a more fully formed version of Franz Wagner, who has really come on of late. His point totals in the last 4 games are now 10, 15, 17, and 18, going up to most recent. 18 was against Iowa. And he was 6 for 6 on twos, and this wasn't his best outside shooting game, but I'm not worried about his outside shot. The stroke looks great, and he's a 90% free throw shooter right now. The numbers dating back to his time in Europe from both the free throw stripe and the 3-point line are excellent. That's going to come. I'm greatly encouraged by seeing stuff like his Euro step finish in transition and being able to finish in the half court a little bit more in this game. And also that he was a willing passer in this one. He had 4 assists in this game. His turnover rate is below 5 this year. So for him, his assist rate is below 5 this year, which is usually even centers don't go that low. So to see him notice some more drive and kick opportunities and to be able to do that without turning the ball over, he only had 1 turnover in this game. The only other multi-assist game he had was when he had 3 assists and 4 turnovers against North Carolina. So this was we're seeing an increased comfort level with him, and I'm excited to see how that plays out the rest of the season, because he has been consistently getting better, and I don't think we're done seeing improvement out of him, particularly in his shooting from beyond the arc. So there are a number of ways that I think that Michigan is going to be different come March, and I think pretty much all of them are going to be better. And speaking of Franz Wagner, one last question. This is from @IamStefanZonia. Will Franz end up being more hated by opposing fans than Mo? A tough one, but I'm liking the early signs for Franz. We did get him shushing the Iowa crowd after a 3-pointer in this game. We've seen him turn towards opposing benches. We've seen him get a little demonstrative. And so, you know, we saw with Mo that these things tend to evolve over the course of a career because you start to develop a back and forth beefing relationship with opposing student sections. You develop that with players as well. You know, you get those things have to develop over years, or at least facing teams multiple times over the course of a season. We haven't seen that yet with Franz. So, except with Iowa and against Iowa, he was quite demonstrative. So I'm excited to see how he is treated as we start to get some return games in, but more when he, you got to perform before you get to talk. So we haven't had many big performances from him yet. We've gotten a few lately, and I think that's going to really open things up for him from a trash talking perspective and a trolling opposing fans perspective. We'll see. The thing that really goes in Bo's favor here is that he's a center, and centers tend to be involved in a lot of could-go-either-way foul situations. So I don't know if Franz is going to have as many opportunities from that perspective to kind of get under opposing fans' skin by, you know, either complaining about calls or, you know, maybe flopping a little bit to draw a call every once in a while. Mo was not necessarily above that. So we'll see. I think I have to go with Mo, but Franz is going to make it close. And as Brian noted on Twitter, it was funny that people were saying that he was very different from Mo when Franz was being recruited, because he was very clearly a Wagner. We are starting to see at least their on-court personalities are not that different. And I like to think that this was a very long-term troll job by Franz to make people think this, and now he's unleashing his Wagner personality in full. Just another way to catch people off guard. And if that is the case, then Franz is going to end up being more hated because he has been planning this out. So if this was an elaborate long-term troll job, Franz, then I am not giving you enough credit. And with that, that is it for episode 2.0 of the Ace Pod. I would like to thank the law offices of E. Jason Blankenship for sponsoring. And I will be back when I'm back.